So this is the Riot Act Business Profile number one, and it's the 12th of December 2006, and we're in Raven with Erin and Lucy. Say hi.
Hello.
And Tim from Riot Act is here with me as well. Now, Raven, how would you even describe this store in your own words?
I'd describe it as a shop for people in touch with their darker side. a clothing shop that sells a range of accessories, studded leather, that kind of thing. For people that are a little left of centre, I would assume would be the majority of our customers.
Left of centre or off centre?
Bit of both.
Bit of both. A goth shop is the first thing that springs into mind. Would you say it's a fair description?
I'd say that's a part.
Right. Yep.
I've seen a lot of goth shops in Canberra try, and I think they fail because that's all that they are.
Right.
So I think the only reason that we've sort of managed to stay open is that we don't just do that. We will do merchandise, CDs, like we say, paintings, and a lot of different types of people are really into it. So there might be punks, and there might be quite normal people that just like one particular thing.
So who are your customers?
Well, it's predominantly now a lot of younger people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say sort of mid-teens.
Yeah.
But we're starting to get a lot more older.
A lot more older to middle-aged sort of people that want to maybe decorate their homes in a certain way or need something for a fancy dress party.
Yeah. Something a bit more authentic than what one of the fancy dress stores can offer?
Yes,
And sort of like medieval recreation type people, like getting in with the corsets and that sort of stuff, that get people that are a bit more interested in dressing up for the weekend or something like that.
So what is it that you actually sell for the benefit of the audience?
Well, we sell a range of merchandise. T-shirts, patches, CDs, bags.
Range of clothing,
yeah. And, a fair range of accessories, studded accessories, jewellery, probably quite a large range of jewellery now.
Lots of homewares. We have our own in-house Raven brand, which we do cushions, skirts, tops, so there's quite a variety that we have of that sort of stuff as well. We do a lot of homewares, like statuary dolls are quite popular at the moment, the Bleeding Edge goth dolls and the Living Dead dolls. We have Manic Panic hair dye from the States, which is quite a popular, long-running hair care specialist.
So what sort of hair do you come out with Manic Panic?
Any colour you want.
Bright red and orange ribbing shown.
Quite a range of colours and styles.
So the lines that you produce yourself, do you make that yourself or do you have that custom made?
Yes.
At the moment we've just started. Initially I was making everything myself, which is obviously too big a task. So we've now started. We've got just a seamstress in Canberra who
produces some stuff.
So your products are produced locally?
Produced in Canberra, yeah.
Right, you're not sending consignments to China or anything?
Designed by Erin and then produced locally.
Produced in Canberra,
And that comes out cost effective?
Reasonably cost effective. I think where it's a lot more expensive, you often find that the people that might be interested actually care that it's not produced in China, perhaps, or care that it's not produced in a sweatshop. So, some of our market is going to be people that know there's a difference and want things that are produced in Australia. So if you explain it to people quite a lot of the time, then
I think you find that the people into this sort of stuff are a bit more ethically oriented. They would rather come in and buy the CD as opposed to downloading it on the net. And even if they have downloaded it on the net, it's only to find something that they might like, and then they will go and buy the CD
sources
as well. So,
well, those are the ones that come in the store, I guess.
Yeah, or order over phone or the internet.
Yeah,
we also have those capabilities. So, yeah, I think people that are not so much in mall oriented, say people are that sort of business ethic is very important to them.
Tell us a bit about yourself. I noticed on the door you've got downstairs established in 2002. What made you go into business?
Well, basically, excuse me, I actually started the business on my own when I had finished college, and I majored in fashion design and a few other things, but there wasn't any real outlet or avenue for me to do anything in Canberra. And then basically not wanting to leave Canberra, I sort of thought, well, there's, you know, one option is trying to find a shop that I could sell through or going out and doing it myself. And I think that's really where it came from. And we had to start with market stores and things because it was much cheaper. And I've built it like that with our own stuff. And then we've started, you know, supplementing other things like jewellery and all these...
Expanding product range.
Yeah, expanding product range. Because basically, in the end, you couldn't sort of make a living out of any one area, like I was saying initially. So, it was initially for me to create my own clothing and homewares range.
Yeah.
And then found a bit of a problem in that it wasn't really sustainable on its own.
Yeah. And Lucy, you were quite famous in your own special way. You used to work
in my own mind.
You used to work at Impact Records, and you're quite noted for some quite exciting pewter in your nose.
Yes, I've seen the jewellery trend sort of grow over the years, and the social acceptance of it and that. And yeah, I was at Impact Records for quite some time, so yeah, I guess my face is too well known to some people.
Do you find that an advantage in doing business here, or a liability perhaps?
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. If people have had past experience with you, some people will comment on it from knowing your past. I mean, you know, being involved in the music scene in Canberra for so long, in putting shows on and playing in my own band and things like that, yeah, people just get to know you, which, yeah, is a good thing. If you've maintained your integrity, then, it can be an advantage, but I guess it's a disadvantage in some ways.
Yeah. It's probably more credibility for a lot of those crowds, like people that are into heavy metal, for example, would find that a bit more credible. They say, okay, he's been around for a long time, maybe it's not just some sort of company or...
Yeah, you've paid your dues.
More authenticity.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Now, for people who aren't into the scene, what are the differences between your metal people and your goths and your emos? I heard someone say that emos are goths who cut themselves, but...
Goths were goths that cut themselves.
People keep accusing us of being emo, and I think that must have sprouted up while I was busy opening the shop, because I have no idea what the difference is.
Right.
And they keep accusing me of being emo. But last thing I knew, I'd sort of been a goth for going on 10 years or something, and You can't tell a kid that who's decided that you're an emo.
Especially if they want to buy products from you,
feeling
emo, rock on.
and you see it with music trends over the years. If you stick around for long enough, the same music can be called, for example, heavy metal 1 year, speed metal the next year, thrash metal the next year, death metal the next season, when inherently those bands haven't really changed, but public perception or trends have changed.
Well,
so therefore, you know, everything is an evolution, and life is flux, and it just the trends, I guess. And
yesterday's heavy metal is today's easy listening as well.
That's exactly true. Yeah, as people seek more extremes. Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone wants to rebel from the generation before, so. Got to invent something a little more extreme, I guess.
In terms of where the business is today, about how much of your time does it take up?
Well, we'd only have one day off a week.
That's Monday, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Monday, so we're shut. I was estimating before, I think it'd be 40 hours and a half. Again, it depends on whether or not you've got a bass due or, if we just spent a week rearranging the shop, so that sort of took up quite a lot more time.
We were a little impressed when we were getting in contact with your range to send you business hours from 11 till 6, which...
Goths, more goth-oriented.
Yeah, goths don't come out in the morning.
No, we don't wake up in the morning.
That's years of doing the market as well.
Yeah.
I've never wanted to get up at that time in the morning ever again. So
right.
I can't do it.
What sort of times did you have to get up to do Gorman House markets?
Oh, well, usually probably sort of between 5 and 6, depending on which markets you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd usually be there for sort of 7:30 to 8:30 to set up by 10, because in the end it was quite an involved store to set up. It'd take around an hour, a bit longer to do.
So you'd much prefer having a room?
Yeah, just walking
in
the morning.
Flick the lights on
yeah.
and off you go.
Make a cup of tea.
Yeah. A lot less heavy lifting.
Yeah.
What do you feel the biggest challenge has been getting the business to where it is now?
Probably time and money, I think. If I had a lot more time, it would be a lot bigger. You know, you sort of think, oh, I had time to do this and that. So quite a lot of the time things get passed over, and it could take months to do something that you've been planning, just because, you know, you've got to be running the shop and you've got to
prioritise your time.
Yeah, you have to prioritise time. So, yeah, if I had a lot more time, I think that would make life a lot easier, progressing a lot better.
So how many people do you employ, anyone other than yourselves here?
No, we're the only two
so
here at the moment.
When do you take holidays?
Monday.
We don't. Yeah.
Mondays.
Yeah. Every day before I leave.
Every day before I leave, exactly.
Or is it a holiday being in a business you love?
It is. It's a lot easier. People sort of go, when do you get a day off? But if we have a day off, we sit at home thinking, okay, what can I do? What have I got to get done? And half the time we end up coming in and cleaning or doing something else.
Or there's a new rack to be painted emails to be answered or letters to be written or bills to be paid. So there's a lot of running around on your days off as well to pick up little bits and pieces of hardware or screws or a hammer or something like that.
Exactly.
Always something to do.
Yeah, so
no,
we don't have holidays.
Now I walk past this shop pretty much sometimes 6 times a day, sometimes more, and it must be my world of my own because I don't usually notice a sign, but how do you promote the business, I mean, other than the shop front?
We have monthly ads in BMA magazine. We do a bit of internet marketing with relevant sort of sites and links to other sites and that sort of thing. And we've done quite a few concerts, what did we do? We did Indie Fest.
Sponsored a stage at Indie Fest. We've sponsored the last couple of Metal for the Brains, or been one of the sponsors of the last couple of Metal for the Brains. We've been quite heavily involved in that. The Bloodlust Festival that used to run in Sydney, we've sponsored that, and we often take merchandise to sell off. Underground stall holders and little distributors and merchandisers and businesses will all come together and sell, swap, trade stuff.
So really targeted?
Very much targeted, yeah. And selling the t-shirts of the relevant bands that are playing and similar international bands, selling their merchandise. We put on quite a few shows with things ranging from Gypsy Noir belly dance duo to things like The Eternal, which is, I guess you'd call it an emo-oriented band from Melbourne, to things like thrash bands.
Not goth.
We've put on a Zeitgeist, which is a Sydney goth rock band. We did their single launch down here to promote them.
Did that in store?
No, we actually did that at Toast.
Toast, right.
Yeah, just as a as a sort of push for them and us. So we do it. Yeah, we do a lot of fun.
You figure that's where your audience is going to be?
Yes. Yeah. Well, a portion of our audience.
Yeah.
A portion of our audience.
Oh, sorry, your market.
Yes. audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also bringing out Gospel of the Horns, which is sort of a Melbourne war metal band. We're bringing them out in February. We're then doing the Canberra show of a New Zealand band called Diocletian with Abigail from Japan and Toxic Holocaust from the US in March, on the long weekend in March. So we get involved in sponsorship and putting shows on like that, helping sort of bands out. Basically, there's not a lot of money in it, a lot of work in it, but it all helps sort of build the scene. The scene and
so you seem very tied to the music scene. Is that something you see continuing, say, in 5 or 10 years' time?
Yeah, very much so. Just given that it's I guess, a passion of both of ours is the music, and the music then affects the image and the imagery.
Do you think the people who come in to buy the Gothic homewares or the hair care products, the music is such a large part of their life that they're inseparable?
Probably a different type of music, because, I mean, a lot of the Gothic stuff is going to have its own musical genre, which we stock a lot, some CDs from as well. I think really a lot of our customers are very music driven, a lot, but probably not all. Because I think they focus on the merchandise and the lifestyle around that as well.
Yeah.
So they're sort of involved in the whole scene of it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's all a complete package, you know.
Where would you like to take the business to in that time frame? And what do you see from it evolving to?
Well, obviously, there's still a fair bit of room to expand in here. You know, we want to expand quite a lot of our ranges of, you know, clothing, because there's so many clothing companies we could be buying from, and we purchase from about 4 that we want to purchase from. So there's quite a large room for expansion in a lot of the products that we do. And, I mean, we don't even, at the moment, we don't sort of have a internet...
presence?
Yeah. Our website's just very basic, and you can't purchase from it. So that's another goal, is to get that all streamlined so that you can purchase online.
That'd be particularly for your own design products, I guess.
Yeah, well, that'd be the thing, and probably to get them
Not be as constrained by physical location.
Yes. There's a whole big wide world out there that you can market to over the internet now. Yeah, it's just a matter of time and money and technical skills, knowledge, and ability. But there are a lot of people out there willing to mentor you and give you some assistance and guidance in their specialised field, from the way we advertise, from photographers to models to people that are IT familiar, are very willing to sort of jump in and help you, whereas if you were paying for professional services, it would just be totally out of reach and out of your league, and you really have to prioritise.
Can I just backtrack for a moment to your customers? Mostly young teenagers into the darker side, shall we say. Do you have much trouble with them?
No, I wouldn't say we have any trouble with the sort of goth and the metal kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good, and they're very loyal.
Yeah.
Definitely. but yeah, you can have some trouble with just kids that come through. You know, we get a lot of rubbish and things like that, which is fun.
Shoplifting?
No, not very much.
Okay.
No, I think it's
so
it's a lot of honour
minimal.
Driven. Sorry?
Shrinkage is minimal.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking particular somewhere like Toast, whenever they have a punk night, they've had to steel clad the toilets because little buggers just keep close to crack.
Yeah.
You don't get any trouble like that with your crowd?
No, as I say, I don't think our customers are a lot more, I guess, really very honest and quite, they're
honor
almost
driven
quite
and
conservative.
Very ethical,
they're very sort
very
of
ethical.
Caring to you in a lot of ways. They don't
respectful.
Really want things getting broken or closed. Or, you know, it means a lot to them that if you were to close, they would be quite upset. So I think a lot of what they can reason through is that, okay, if I start breaking things, if I steal things, prices are going to go up, or they're just going to shut,
mm-hmm.
Or they might completely change what they do and just not do anything that I want.
Yeah.
You know,
so
and
there's a time and a place for everything as well. If you've got a bunch of hyped up, sweaty, drunken kids all hyping each other up, then that can happen in any crowd, that you can get people needing to release their aggression. Whereas I've been involved in the heavy metal scene for a good number of years and really never seen much trouble in it, just simply because people get their aggressions out through the music.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to go and, you know, smash every car's window in the car park sort of thing. The music's their passion and their outlet,
a lot of their
catharsis, so therefore they're quite shy and retiring people that are quite respectful.
A lot of the security will say that.
Yes.
That's their favourite crowd. I mean, they probably say it to everybody, but they always say we're their favourite crowd because
there's no trouble.
And if there is, it will be dealt with in-house.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say that in my own experience, a heavy metal crowd is a much safer place to be than a cultures or tribute band.
What do you think is the most satisfying thing about running the business?
To sum it up, yeah, personal satisfaction and job satisfaction. I mean, I know that's answering what's satisfying with, well, the satisfaction is satisfying, but that's probably it.
Well, definitely getting to be involved with things that you like all day.
Yeah,
you listen to music that you like.
I was
going
to ask about
that.
Listening to the music that you like all day long, compared to just about every other environment where you're stuck with something horrible.
That makes a big difference to the people that come in too. I mean, there's no point in, for example, trying to sell a Dimmu Borgir t-shirt if you're playing the latest Christmas Carol album, you know, the two are incongruous, so everything's got to be, you know, tied in. But then again, you also need a range of music, because if you're, for example, playing death metal and you're getting a middle-aged housewife who's going to a fancy dress party that wants a corset is going to get put off by that. So you still need to vary.
Is that part of the experience for her, to be walking into somewhere where the music's a little daunting? And,
I've heard a lot of funny comments about people being, oh, I'm frightened to go in there. And we try really hard not to be frightening, but it's
some
not easy.
Some people just associate
that.
Some
people just
like I walk
scared.
Upstairs, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a rent-related issue, not an intentionally frightening-related issue.
You'd like the shopfront space if the money was right.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah,
we say that, but
yeah,
it's probably a better spot for us, really.
I think for the kind of thing that we sell wouldn't necessarily work.
You're not trying to attract mainstream.
No, that's exactly right. It's more a destination sort of shop than a throw in and impulse buy sort of shop.
Just moving to more regular business issues, local government policy regulations, is there anything the local government can do that would make your lives easier? Other than maybe arranging a bit of parking.
Parking is terrible.
Parking and loading zones are a bit
Also, we were talking about this the other day, that cleaning has been terrible in Civic. I think they've put so much money into all these new developments, and there's so much that you walk along the street and go, oh God, I wish that was a bit more clean. So, and probably as running a business, you don't sort of have time to actually get out there, sweep, you know, go and wash the windows all day. And like we have cleaners and things. But I just think to some degree, you know, I really like Civic and I think it's not meeting, the standard of it isn't meeting the standard of what they're trying to do with it now and what it really could be. Like it's an interesting place, but I think...
So neglecting the old city centre in favour of the new 684 development.
Yeah,
but even to say that street out in front of Section 84 can get filthy just with burger wrappers and drink containers and even just newspapers.
Are they
just given that there's so many more people coming through,
that haven't met up.
It's become a lot more thoroughfare.
I mean, they have people who are supposed to come through in the morning. Is it clean at the start of the day and just gets filthy through the day?
It's probably a volume's increased, and they haven't increased the services to meet that, I think.
Yes.
You know, bins will get full and streets will get full by the end of the day.
Yeah, you've got 100,000 extra people, but no extra bins. And, I think traffic congestion around there for the delivery drivers and things like that.
So they haven't been paying enough Zoo Tycoon.
No. You mentioned when we were chatting before the podcast about the support you got from local business authorities like the Canberra Business Advisory Centre and those kind of groups. Do you want to comment on that?
I think that's been a mixed bag. Being probably less experienced than a lot of people in business, I got every pamphlet you could get from them and every sort of resource that I could, which was great. But I think to sort of encourage new people into business, it could go a little bit further. We spent quite a lot of money on things like lawyers and accountants to actually get set up, which, you know, you would expect to do, but that can be quite inhibiting. And I think they're a little bit more, you know, maybe if they were to run more courses, that sort of thing, that were sort of free or subsidised. Because I found that gap between I had to pay for quite a lot of education and then also pay for quite a lot of professional service. And I found there was a bit of a gap there where you sort of thought, oh, God, it's so expensive. It took up sort of 2-3% of the budget of setting
up
the shop.
How are you set up? Is it limited liability company or sole trader, or what's the...
it's a partnership.
Right. Just getting some microphone technique prompting. Vocally there.
Set up as a partnership between two.
What about from a federal government perspective? Is there anything that, you know, that could be made easier for you to run a business in Canberra from that perspective? Say, you were talking to me earlier about a BAS. You know, is there enough advice out there on how to submit a BAS in a timely manner? Or,
I mean, from my own point of view, I run a much simpler business where I've got a limited number of subscribers. I've got a single product. So I multiply however many subscribers I have in the month by $50, and that's that box filled in. You've got product lines coming out the wazoo here.
Yeah.
And looking to expand them.
Very much so. It's fairly tricky. I know everybody sort of expected that GST and BAS and all this stuff would be a lot easier than the previous systems, but there are a few. I mean, I've been doing them for a while now, and I still always send them to the accountant and say, okay, just check that. And there's always something that he goes, no, look, put this here, put that there. So
even
I find it's not very simplistic,
even though
I've
done
it quite a lot.
You're still not up to speed on it with the training that's made available.
Yeah.
So in terms of a retail environment, it's still pretty complex.
It's still pretty tricky. If you had one, like you say, one supplier, one straight product line, that would be really easy. But we import some things.
Right.
So then you've got to calculate
GST. Oh, tax imports. Right, okay.
And if you've exported anything, like, it becomes sort of prohibitive when that's a lot of our market, would be to import things that are different.
But you're supporting an entire industry of accountants.
Yeah.
It's all about creating jobs.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think it does. I honestly do think that unless you have quite a lot of accountancy training,
or professional help,
you need professional help, really.
And the help is out there, but you've really got to go and look for it and pay for it. And there are big gaps. And, you have to pay for all your training. And if you're doing that, then that's eating into your budget for opening a shop. So it's very much a catch-22 of prioritising.
An administrative overhead.
And it's tricky to also...
That doesn't let you focus on what your business is actually doing.
Yes, that's right.
It's tricky to know when you need to do something and what you actually need to know specific to your business. That's what I find has been quite hard to find out. You know, so you really need to get on the phone and say to someone, okay, or, you know, pay an accountant and say, what do I need to know for my business, specifically for me? Because you can read book after book after book, but they won't say, okay, if you're importing products, and you're in a retail environment and you're doing this and that, you know, so you do need.
Are the tax office helplines useful for that? Or?
Yeah, they're not too bad. I'm probably, maybe I'm a little bit sceptical, but I'm always of the opinion you have to pay someone to get them to work for you.
Well, we do know that people have asked the tax office for advice and the tax office have been unable to provide that advice, whereas by going and paying a professional and sitting down and asking those questions, then that advice has been provided, whereas the tax office...
Probably some practical gaps.
I think the big catches are you've got to be aware and you've got to know what questions to ask. And the answers are out there, but you've got to know what to ask and where to look for them. So all the information is there, but you have to go looking for it.
So what would you say is the biggest risk facing this business going into the future, the biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge has got to be managing sort of your monthly expenses, I think, which is going to be the case with any retail. Because, you know, we sort of look in terms of, okay, what products are doing well? We'll shift more into those, shift more out of what's not selling very well. So you have to be quite on the ball with things like that. And I think if something were to suddenly drop, some sort of demographic of ours sort of suddenly disappears.
I was
going to
say, it is fashion related, isn't it?
It's big at the moment, but it's always been fairly consistent because, like I said, I mean, this is a nearly 4-year-old business now, and there's always been our target market has always been there and fluctuates quite a lot. So, to some degree, that can be a bit of a worry that if really drop off.
For example, the way Stadium Rock is very big and grunge came along, and you know those Stadium Rock bands that ruled the world suddenly were playing 500 seat
venues,
clubs and venues.
On the other hand, people were wearing their studded leather collars through both faces.
That's right.
That's the thing. If you're responsive, then it's fine. But if you sort of miss a few clues and go, oh, what's going to happen next? Next big thing's going to be everybody's going to be wearing blue pants, and you buy a whole heap of blue pants, and no, that wasn't the next big thing. So
I'm guessing they're still going to wear black, but the cut of the black is
slight differences every year. So, if you spend a lot of money and get something really wrong, I think that's probably a big risk, and that's going to be a risk with anybody of keeping, because you've just got to keep on top of the cash flow all the time. And if you make a big enough mistake, well, you know, you really need to start ringing people and saying, okay, I need a couple more months on that deal.
Sell a lot of gear on consignment here, don't you?
Yes, we do at the moment.
I imagine that's a shopkeeper's dream.
Yeah, it's not bad.
As long as you can turn it over.
I think of it a bit like sort of a short-term loan that, you know, you've been given all this stock and if it sells, great, you pay for it. And if you don't, then you can say, okay, this didn't sell, take it back or swap it for something else. And you can give them feedback as well without risking, you know, the paintings, for example, are quite expensive. So if we had purchased them up front, we would have risked quite a lot of money and you wouldn't get the return on it very quickly. And then you'd sort of, like I say, you'd start to go, money's a bit tight now, and do that for a few months and you'll find that it becomes a serious problem.
Whereas consignment, I think there are pros and cons.
What are the downsides for you in consignment selling?
Takes up real estate and you're using problems.
You've got to have the space for it. There's not much of a markup on it. It's very labour intensive. A lot of people that put things on consignment are not business people that are either bands or artists or hobby industry type people that don't really have much of an idea of the business side of it. So therefore, you can have a lot of stock, whereas a lot of people don't do consignment just because there is not. It's very labour intensive. There's
just
not a big
administrative overhead.
You spend a lot of time explaining things and doing their paperwork for them.
Yes.
A lot of time. Here's your tax invoice, here's your receipts.
and,
put
there,
them
and
there.
There's no markup on the consignment things. It's more building a scene and doing people within that scene a favour.
Okay.
To, for example, with the paintings, have the paintings exposed. A lot of the artists that we have paintings by also do custom tattoo work and designs. They do murals and that sort of thing, so they might see someone's artwork hanging in our shop and go, I really like that, my band needs an album cover, so therefore we will commission that artist to do some work.
That doesn't
so
get you any money.
No.
We're not making
no.
any money, but that artist is
yeah.
is generating work out of that.
Supports the scene.
Exactly, yeah. And what goes around comes around, yeah, and that usually builds it up.
Just to finish up, is there anything, for people who don't already know about this shop, anything you'd like to say to them about why they might want to come in?
Well, I'll explain it. I think we're very focused on, I guess, having a range of things that are very individual. And so, you know, if you don't, I guess if people don't want to go out and pick a lot of off-the-rack clothing and look like everybody else, to some degree that's probably our biggest market. So that's probably our big advantage is that, you can come in and get something and you'll be quite different to other people as a general rule.
And I don't think anyone else stocks Gothic homeware in a major way. So.
No, not as far as I know.
It's a niche.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for yours.
Wonderful.